It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We are going to end catch and release. We catch them? Oh, go ahead. We catch them? Go ahead. Under my administration, anyone who illegally crosses the border will be detained until they are removed out of our country and back to the country from which they came. Zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero. 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 They don't come in here. They don't come in here. I am going to create a new special deportation task force focused on identifying and quickly removing the most dangerous criminal illegal immigrants in America who have evaded justice, just like Hillary Clinton has evaded justice, okay?
All right, I'm going to interrupt. That was candidate Donald Trump on the campaign trail famously talking about how he was going to build a border and stop illegal immigration. And I think many and most of us would argue that the reason that he marched into victory in 2016 so unexpectedly, pulling over Democrats, some Democrats, was the whole issue of immigration, the out-of-control immigration that we have experienced in this country that most people have witnessed. They've watched the loss of jobs. They've watched long lines now in hospitals, emergency rooms. They've watched their schools get crowded, and I could go on and on. And so they were thrilled, really, that someone was finally speaking for the American people. And that's why a few days ago, it was disappointing, that's the understatement, when the president basically announced that he was giving amnesty to something like 1.8 million immigrants. Illegal immigrants who had come into this country. And he says basically they're going to give citizenship after a period of 10 to 12 years. He says that they will have in the visa lottery program, they will put $25 billion in a trust fund for the wall, and on it goes. But what's going on here? What's going on here? What's actually going on? Meanwhile, the Senate is coming up with their own plan. The House has a plan called the Goodlatte Bill, which we've told you about, which is excellent. So I've asked Rosemary Jenks, who is the government affairs director for Numbers USA, and you know, almost every day when we discuss this, I refer you to Numbers USA because they are the largest grassroots organization whose information and work in Washington is so trustworthy. And so I've asked Rosemary to join me this morning. Rosemary, good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you, Rosemary. Let me just ask you, what do you think of the things that Donald Trump laid out? I know there was a conference call over the weekend with Stephen Miller. What is the most concerning thing to you about his proposal?
Well, the problem, there are a couple of problems. The president has been talking about ending chain migration and ending the visa lottery, and his framework does both of those things. However, it uses all of the visas from those programs that are supposedly eliminated to bring in the more than 4 million people who are on the visa waiting list. So people who have applied for but not yet been given a green card, all 4 million of those people would be brought in. So essentially we would not see any real reduction in legal immigration for 15 to 20 years. On top of that, we have this massive amnesty. And the 1.8 million number is basically a guess, because they don't actually know how many people would qualify for the amnesty that they are laying out, which basically says if you came to the country under the age of 16 before 2012, June of 2012, then you could qualify for this amnesty. That is so open-ended that it is, you know, we don't know how people would prove that they've been here since 2012. We don't know how people would prove who they even are, whether they have a criminal record in a foreign country, whether they're gang members. All of those sorts of things are unaddressed. And, you know, by definition, the illegal population has trouble proving all of those things in a reliable way. So the impact on American workers, on American wages, on schools, hospitals, you know, all of the things you mentioned, is going to be tremendous, because we're going to continue the current legal immigration flow of about 1 million a year. We're going to add a minimum of 1.8 million illegal aliens who will now be legal and on their way to citizenship. And then we're going to have a surge of more illegal immigration because we've had this amnesty. And, you know, even if the president were able to build a wall along the entire 2,000-mile southern border instantly, we would still get increased illegal immigration, because at least half, roughly half of the illegal aliens coming into the country are coming on legal visas and then overstaying. So the wall will have no impact on that whatsoever. And because the president's plan doesn't include mandatory E-Verify, all of those illegal aliens will be able to get jobs in the U.S., and that will encourage them to stay.
You know, the, by contrast, the Goodlatte bill, as you well know, Rosemary, would prevent citizenship ever, I think, by the Dreamers, ever. Yes. So that you could 700,000 or so could stay. We won't send you back to your home countries. You could stay and work and be here legally, but you can never be citizens. That, to me, is reasonable. I think that's probably one of the things that bothers me the most. Why suddenly decide to grant citizenship? That's kind of new coming from the president, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I don't understand where the change has come. And the timing of it is particularly bad. When I first heard last week that the president was going to, or that the White House was going to come up with some kind of framework, they originally said they would come out with it on Monday. And I thought, okay, well, Monday, the State of the Union is on Tuesday. So the president wants something good that he can talk about at the State of the Union. And then this came out, and I was just floored. I mean, it undercuts the Goodlatte bill in the House. It means that this is the starting point. This plan, which is left of center, is the starting point, and it can only go further left from here. It's only going to get worse if the president insists on some kind of protection for the Dreamer or DACA population, because he's going to have to negotiate further. The Democrats are not accepting his plan. And so, you know, at this point, the best win for the president would be to just walk away from the deal. Just say, okay, you know what? I offered you the world, and you refused it, Democrats. So it's off. No deal.
You know, it's interesting, of course, Rosemary, as you know, the president tweeted, 2 days ago, he said, I have offered DACA a wonderful deal, including a doubling in the number of recipients and a 12-year pathway to citizenship for two reasons. Number one, because the Republicans want to fix a long time terrible problem. Number two, to show that Democrats do not want to solve DACA, only use it. How could we know the president's mind? Do you think he's actually proposing this bill or this proposal that's offensive to his voters? It is offensive to those of us that supported him for the reasons that he said he was running, one of the big platforms that he said he stood for. Do you suppose this is a negotiating ploy to demonstrate that the Democrats are not operating in good faith at all?
I hope so. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I hope that is the case, and I hope the result will be that, you know, in the art of the deal, President Trump wrote about how when you go into a negotiation, the most important thing is that you're willing to walk away from it. And he needs to walk away from this. The White House needs to walk away from this plan.
Rosemary, let's talk about just the nuts and bolts, because I mentioned briefly that the Senate now is coming up, of course, with their own plan. Now, I'm guessing this is still the Gang of Six, Graham, Flake, Durbin, and Corey, whatever his name is, from Colorado.
Gardner.
Yeah, Cory Gardner. So it's the Gang of Six are coming up with their bill, and Goodlatte has his bill already established. Are there just three bills, or is there some other bill I don't know about? Is there just one in the Senate?
No, there are actually several. What it looks like they're doing is using a Grassley-Cornyn bill as the base bill, and that bill would have basically matched President Trump's new amnesty population in size. And then they are taking out everything in that bill that dealt with sanctuary cities, with asylum reform. They have weakened the protections against the unaccompanied alien children that are in the Goodlatte bill. They've removed E-Verify. Well, they didn't actually do E-Verify in the first place. So, and they're accepting proposals from other senators, including Senators Collins and Murkowski and, you know, the extreme left of the Republican Party in the Senate, which is all fairly extreme. But, yeah, so, this only gets worse from here. Whatever product they come up with, and if they can come up with an agreement before February 8th, supposedly they're going to vote on it. If not, that is what Senator McConnell has said, that, you know, once they fund the government again on February 8th, then they will move to an open immigration debate, whatever that means. So we have to hope they don't have a deal.
Yeah. You know, this is so it's confusing for us, I have to say. So for people listening who are, like, actually living normal lives, how can we distill this? Like, what is the process, Rosemary? Whose bill is going to take the lead? Who's going to decide on what? And what's the president going to, can he consider Goodlatte? Would he? Is he going to, how does this work to get it down to the finish line?
Well, because the president came out with this framework, he has really undercut the House Republicans and the Goodlatte bill. He has made that bill look extreme. He sort of tried to position himself more in the center, and then the Gang of Six to the left. But by moving that goalpost, he has really, in my view, messed up our chances for getting anything that even looks decent. So what they're talking about happening is the Senate voting first, which is never a good idea because you don't get a conservative product out of the Senate, and then the House being expected to pass whatever the Senate passes. That's a disaster for our country. So, you know, at this point, I think the whole thing is up in the air, and I think the best thing that we all can do is make sure that President Trump knows we do not support this framework. We support everything he said in that Phoenix rally when he was candidate Trump. We want him to go back to who we elected. We do not want this plan.
And let me just say that Numbers USA is leading the charge on at least this is one small thing you can do. If you tweet, use hashtag keep your promise. Hashtag keep your promise. That's a pretty basic request. Anything else practical that the people listening could do, Rosemary?
Go to our website, numbersusa.com, and you have to sign up, and we'll give you free information. The sign-up is free, and we'll facilitate you contacting your members of Congress, tell them how you feel about all of this. We'll make it very easy. You just have to push the button and send the email. And, you know, get on social media, tell the president, no, this is not what we asked for.
Okay, and again, it's you can use the phrase, even if you don't tweet, you can use it in your Facebook or whatever, but it's a hashtag, keep your promise. Keep your promise. The president has kept so many of his promises, and some of it, we've been delighted, but this is a big one. This could undermine and change the entire country, and long after President Donald Trump is gone, the rest of us are going to have to deal with what's left. So this is an important issue. So numbersusa.com, we'll put that on our Facebook page, and you can go and respond to what they're asking you to do. Rosemary Jenks, thank you so much, Rosemary. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Sandy. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, Sandy Rios, lots going on, so you know that, don't you? You kind of knew that, right? So when we come back, lots of those other things going on. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's Dr. John Oswalt from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
One of the remarkable things about the God of the Bible is that he is a God who speaks. The writers of the Bible again and again talk of him as the living God, and when they do, they include this idea that the idols are dumb. They cannot speak. Language is an incredible mystery, really. What is it that makes human beings able to communicate in word? Personally, I think that is the image of God in us, because God speaks. Right at the beginning of the Bible, God spoke the world into existence. It did not somehow evolve from his body. It was something that he spoke.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Not too long ago, a friend of mine snapped a photo of me at my desk. I had three computers running, I was talking on the phone and texting on my cell, all at the same time. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You probably have moments like that too. Technology can run your life, and it's never more true than for your teen. So, have you stepped out of your digital world lately to connect with your teen? Have you made a date this week to have coffee with your daughter or take your son to the driving range? I'm not one to discourage the use of technology, but keep it in its place. This time, turn the cell phone off and take some time for eye-to-eye communication with your teen.
Strengthen your parenting muscles with Mark Gregston's free two-week boot camp called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
President Trump's immigration plan looks like and smells like amnesty. The proposal met with skepticism from conservatives and downright anger from Democrats. It was expected the president would offer a pathway to citizenship for 700,000 of the so-called dreamers. Instead, as many as 1.8 million illegals could become citizens, provided they meet strict guidelines, good moral character, no criminal record, and education. In exchange, the White House would get $25 billion for a border wall and the elimination of chain migration and the visa lottery. Instead of jumping for joy, Democrats are furious, accusing the president of holding dreamers hostage. But that's just not true. President Trump called the Democrats bluff. Their response to his immigration plan exposed the truth. It has nothing to do with taking care of illegals. It's all about a power grab. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The president put forth a plan. That plan is a campaign to make America white again. They are changing the character of our country by what they are putting forth. They bring a tear to the eye of the Statue of Liberty, and they bring fear to the hearts of people who are here playing by the rules.
I have to say, she's good. That's Nancy Pelosi, not the leader of the House. She wishes she were, but she might be again in 2018. Who knows? Nancy Pelosi declaring, of course, this is all about changing America, this whole proposal on immigration. Well, she would know about that because that's what the Democrats have been about the business of doing. Since, this was going on in the 80s. This was going on with Ted Kennedy. They made a plan where they would start bringing in people from other countries, third world countries, and they would morph the country into something different, not because they wanted to make America good or great or, you know, not that so much, but they knew that they would continue to win elections because the population from poorer countries tend to be more socialist. They believe in big government. They would come in and be beholden also to the handouts the government would give. And then Who would they vote for? Gee, I'm just guessing. And so it was a plan. Nancy knows all about altering the country. She knows all about it. This is a statement by Rick Manning responding to what the president wanted to do. He says, now that the White House has released the framework of a deal that not only provides amnesty for 1.8 million illegal aliens with a pathway to citizenship, it also allows for 4 million more people to come in through the chain migration and visa lottery programs over the next decade. If the deal survives five Congresses and at least one other president, only then would chain migration end. This is not only a bad deal, it's a disastrous deal. Rick Manning goes on to say, first, President Trump providing amnesty is his read my lips moment, giving his political opponents a major victory while destroying his own credibility with those who trust him. The practical implication will be the inevitable Electoral College loss of Arizona, Texas, and Florida for Republicans, eliminating any pathway to the presidency for a future GOP candidate, and creating a permanent Democrat majority in Congress. We have seen what happens when that occurred in California, where single-party Democrat rule has turned the Golden State into what some are calling the poverty capital of the U.S., one ridden with tent cities. Another story in my inbox just now from Conservative HQ, Trump immigration plan, making America into California. And so that's just to give you an idea of some of the practical parts of it. I want to mention just a few more things. Hans von Spakovsky has written an article for Fox News, which we will post on our Facebook page, The Importance of Public Safety and National Security in the Immigration Debate. And Hans tracks two recent reports from the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security, in which he says 44.2% of the criminals convicted in federal courts were non-citizens from 2014 to 2016. 44.2% of the criminals convicted in federal courts were non-citizens. Non-citizens, aliens, are only 8.4% of the American population. So it gives you an idea, and it goes down and breaks down the crimes. I won't do that right now, but we will put this. You get the point, don't you? You get the point. And so this is going to be posted on our Facebook page. It's not that every immigrant is a criminal. That's not what we're saying. It actually doesn't matter. I mean, it's certainly consideration, but the point is we have to have borders and boundaries, and our first allegiance is to taking care of our own children, our own families. If we so disrupt the economy and we overload schools so that our kids cannot get educated, overload our hospitals so that our mothers and fathers and grandmothers can't get medical care that they need, we have done an egregious thing. And I would say, again, even biblically, we are told that if a man does not take care of his own, he is worse than an infidel. Other people have their countries. They have their families. And it's their family's responsibility to take care of them. That doesn't mean we don't allow anyone in. Doesn't mean we shut down and only... America is the most generous country on the globe. We have given billions and billions and probably trillions of dollars to help other countries, to build them up, even our enemies. It's not that. We've sent millions of missionaries, and we've used our resources to help the world, and so we should. But we cannot, like, undermine our own ability to do that, to make ourselves safe, to feed ourselves, to educate our children, to give medical care, to build up our military so that we can even be the sort of bastion of freedom for the world. If we undercut our ability to do that, we have really not helped anyone. So I want to read one more. This is just give you a reference to another story. It's Trump snatching defeat from the jaws of victory on immigration. It's written by George Rasley of Conservative HQ. And he talks about the loss of the mandatory E-Verify. Now, that's because K Street and the Chamber of Commerce wants cheap labor. And so they don't want companies to have to verify the citizenship of their workers because it benefits big business not to have to do that. So that's what that's all about. And George goes through and explains, which I've said to you a million times, but it's good for you to read this and pass it on. I don't expect you to remember that the establishment Republican leaders are really in the pocket of K Street, of Chamber of Commerce. Their interests are economic. That's why they're dropping E-Verify out of this. There's no question about it. While the Democrats want more voters. You know what? George goes back into an article by Phyllis Schlafly. My dear friend and mentor, Phyllis Schlafly, kind of makes me sad every time I hear her name. But In 2015, she wrote this great article. I remember interviewing her about this article, but this is what she said. In 2008, National Annenberg Election Survey found that 62% of immigrants prefer a single government-run healthcare system. The 2010 Cooperative Congressional Election Study found that 69% of immigrants support Obamacare. And the Pew Research Center found that 75% of Hispanic and 55% of Asian immigrants support bigger government. The bottom line is that they are raised in socialist countries. They are used to big government. They are not used to democracy, American style, and taking personal responsibility. They're used to being poor. They're used to having, you know, their leaders tell them what to do. They're used to doing things under the table, on the side, through graft and corruption. They have a totally different experience, and that's what they bring to us. To say that they're going to fold in here and be great American citizens. Some will. Our old immigration citizen system made wonderful citizens out of immigrants. They learned the Constitution. They learned our history. They were proud. They worked to learn English. They raised their hand and swore their allegiance to this country. They were so proud. It's not happening that way now. They come over the border or around or however they come in many, many different ways, and they want to make money and send it back home. And they are very disinterested in being loyal American citizens. So I'm going to put that article on our, that's not true of all of them, again, but it's true of millions who are coming in and have in the last decades. This is Trump snatching defeat from the jaws of victory and immigration from conservative HQ. We'll put that on our Facebook page too. And one last one we will post is Trump's draft amnesty, unlimited, forever, and before a wall is built. And that's a Breitbart article by Neil Monroe. So we'll put all three of those on there, and you can kind of read and have a little bit more detail when you're trying to share it with people. Well, last night was the Grammys, and I just want to say big fat yawn. Did I watch? No. Would I watch? No. But I guess I'm obligated as your talk show host to say something about it. So a young girl who, you know, I don't even know who these people are anymore. I really don't. I am so disgusted with Hollywood and with the entertainment industry. And I used to be a professional singer. I lived and breathed this stuff. I loved it. But I don't anymore. They have become so debased and decadent and amoral and disrespectful that I just don't care what they think. However, I guess I'm going to play you a few things. Camila Cabello, she gave a speech last night at the Grammys. She's a Cuban and Mexican immigrant. Let's listen to what she said.
Tonight, in this room full of music's dreamers, we remember that this country was built by dreamers, for dreamers, chasing the American dream.
You know, that's enough right there. I'm sorry. That's enough. You know what? I happen to know that this country was built on people who, by their blood, sweat, and tears, and at great cost to themselves, came here when it wasn't a nation yet, but they came here in various ways, and they worked their fingers to the bone to establish a nation. It was such hard work, and they paid such a great price. They had vision. Dreamers sounds like someone on pot, you know, eating brownies to me. But I'm sorry, I wouldn't say they were dreamers. I would say they were men of vision, men and women of vision who wanted a better life and they wanted religious freedom. Just to kind of set the record straight on history here, if I might do that. And then last night at the Grammys, of course, they made. I know this will be a shock. I know this will be a shock because this group is so clever. You know, they came up with something clever like, you know, maybe bashing President Trump. So, oh yes, that's what they did. So Mrs. Clinton made her little cameo debut. And the way she did it was they were making a joke about who was going to, a lot of celebrities had won Grammys reading books, you know, using their voices for voiceover. And so who was going to be able to do that reading this book by Michael, whatever his name was, the book, the made up book about President Trump that caused such a stir a couple of weeks ago. And so it's called Fire and Fury. So they had all these speculations about who might read and then who appears on a video, but Hillary Clinton, and here she is.
He had a longtime fear of being poisoned. One reason why he liked to eat at McDonald's. Nobody knew he was coming, and the food was safely pre-made.
That's it. We've got it. That's the one.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
The Grammy's in the bag?
In the bag.
All right, so the joke is, of course, that Hillary Clinton was such a good reader that she is going to win the Grammy for reading that book, the book full of lies and fabrications about President Trump. So that's funny. Ha ha ha. But it just reminded me that, you know, Mrs. Clinton is so good at presenting herself so professionally. She is just so good at that. But some of us in D.C. actually know that there's another side to Mrs. Clinton. So I thought I would demonstrate this. This is what she tweeted out just last week. And we had to sort of bleep it. But I just want you to hear, this is what Hillary Clinton also sounds like. Let's listen.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for your feminism, for your activism. And all I can hope is you keep up the really important good work. Let me just say, this is directed to the activist supporting the So let's go.
Yeah, well, I can't say that word. Let's just say it starts with a B and it describes women. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've always known that. We, people who follow politics, know that Mrs. Clinton is very foul-mouthed. She's notorious for that. So the lady on the camera at the Grammys, grace-filled, and the one on the campaign trail is really doesn't seem to be the one that's on behind the scenes. All right. Last week, President Trump went to Davos to this big meeting of the elites of Europe. And John Roberts brought a report out on Friday on Fox News, and I thought we should listen. Let's listen.
We are going to end catch and release. We catch them? Oh, go ahead. We catch them? Go ahead. Under my administration, anyone who illegally crosses the border
is this clip too?
Will be detained until okay. They are removed out of our country and back to the country from which they came. Zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero. 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 They don't come in here. They don't come in here. I am going to create a new special deportation task force focused on identifying.
I don't want to hear the rest of that. I thought it was labeled Davos, that John was going to talk about Davos. We've already been over that road again before in the show today. But you know that the president went to speak to that. And so it was in Switzerland. And he spoke about America first. He told the summit of business and political leaders that the United States would no longer turn a blind eye to what he described as unfair trade practices. By the way, President Trump was the first sitting president to address the annual conclave at that ski resort for more than 18 years. And he also closed his speech by saying that America was open for business. He said, now is the best time to bring your money, your jobs, your businesses to America. The world is witnessing the resurgence of a strong and prosperous America. America first, he said, does not mean America alone. When the United States grows, so does the world. And then he talked about the need to enforce tougher trade rules. We know how he feels about that. He's made that clear. He said the United States will no longer turn a blind eye to unfair trade practices. We cannot have free and open trade if some countries exploit the system at the expense of others. And interestingly enough, you know, because that's kind of enemy territory in a way, the audience was actually pretty friendly. He had a few boos, but mostly they applauded and seemed to enjoy what he had to say. I thought this was, in conjunction with that, this is an interesting article written by, it was in the New York Post, and it says, sorry skeptics, Trump's tax plan is actually working wonders. And it reads like this: the president's policies of cutting high taxes and excessive regulations are sparking a stock market surge and soaring economic confidence. Each day brings announcements from companies ranging from Apple to Walmart that they're giving bonuses and pay hikes, adding new jobs, and increasing their investments in America. Millions of workers will get the bonuses, most of which are $4,000, and untold others will get new or higher paying jobs. And it goes on to talk about how in paychecks people are going to start seeing it. And so it says, you know, unlike what the complaints, it's actually working. And someone wrote, Armageddon continues. Three more large job bonus and or salary increases announced from major U.S. employers today because of tax cuts and job acts. When will Armageddon end? That was a pretty good tongue in cheek. And so the president was made quite a splash in Davos. And we are grateful. We have to be grateful. He does his State of the Union address, by the way, tomorrow night. And, of course, we'll be talking about that. When we come back, let's talk about national security, because lots has happened. More FBI email between the two who were involved in the Clinton email investigation, more corruption being revealed. We'll discuss it when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The Trump administration has ushered in an era where the church in America is enjoying a bit of relief from being pushed to the margins by our government. We must, however, redouble our commitment to execute the Great Commission in this hour. Should we fail to do so, who knows what lurks just around the corner? Instead of being entranced by the light of liberty, let us work while it is day.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We give to him and he enables us to have what we need so that we in turn can give more. And the more we give, the more he provides. And the more he provides, the more we can give. And it just keeps going like that.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, The Grace of Giving, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
If you like trips where you have to plan everything, then maybe our tour is not for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Of course, I'm talking about our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, and then a separate trip to Williamsburg, Virginia. And guess what? We take care of everything. All you have to do is, as they say, show up. But we take these spiritual heritage tours twice a year, once in June and once in September. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, who is a historian, will be joining us for both tours, and he will tell you everything you need to know about the places, the times, the events that we will experience on these tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for everything.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On the eve of his first State of the Union address, President Trump's administration is expected to unveil the details of his new immigration policy. Breitbart's Neil Monroe reports that a leaked copy shows it'll look a lot like past comprehensive deals. Amnesty up front, border security and fundamental reforms later. Hard experience with such deals suggests that later will never come. Indeed, Democrats have become ever more brazen about keeping the borders insecure, perpetuating chain migration and the diversity lottery, and blocking the requirement for businesses to use the E-Verify system to prevent the hiring of illegal aliens, all for a very simple reason. Doing so perpetuates their fundamental transformation of our electorate, inevitably guaranteeing a permanent Democratic majority. Here's a prediction. That majority will be evident in the House this fall as alienated Republican voters stay home and a presidential impeachment looms. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee predict their four-page staff memo documenting alleged government surveillance abuses could be released very soon.
Within the next week to 10 days, 2 weeks to most, it should be made public.
190 Republicans and a dozen Democrats have read the document that Fox News understands was crafted for wide distribution. Sensitive information was kept to a minimum and limited redactions are needed.
There's nothing in there at all which could tip an enemy off as to what methods we use or any sources we have.
The committee's ranking Democrat Adam Schiff drafted his own memo and joined forces with senior Senate Democrat Dianne Feinstein. They want Facebook and Twitter to investigate claims the release the memo hashtag was the top trending hashtag among Twitter accounts believed to be operated by Kremlin-linked groups. As momentum to release the House intelligence memo builds, texts recently made public seem to reinforce Republican concerns about FBI senior leadership under former Director Comey.
Before we got these text messages, we all suspected the fix was in on the Clinton investigation. Now that we've seen these text messages, we know the fix was in.
Republican Senator Chuck Grassley released text messages from February 2016 that suggest now demoted FBI agent Peter Strzok and reassigned FBI lawyer Lisa Page fretted about the impact of a rigorous investigation of Hillary Clinton and the mishandling of classified information. Page writes, "One more thing. She might be our next president. The last thing you need is going in there loaded for bear. You think she's going to remember or care that it was more DOJ than FBI?" Strzok replied, "Agreed." They also discussed the idea of a special counsel to take over the Clinton email case and floated Patrick Fitzgerald, who investigated national security leaks during the Bush administration. The text referenced the use of non-government email accounts and encrypted apps for FBI business, a possible violation of federal records laws. Before the Justice Department confirmed thousands of texts were recovered after a technical problem, Grassley said the timing was disconcerting.
Maybe there's a legitimacy for it, but doesn't it seem a little strange?
All right, that was Chuck Grassley. That Catherine Herridge on Fox had a lot in that report. So let's just go back to what she talked about, the first part of it. We've been discussing that four-page memo that Devin Nunes was talking about, and so were a half a dozen members of Congress and part of that select committee talking about they voted to make it available to every member of Congress to go into this private room and read the memo because they feel the contents are so shocking. And I have given you a preview of what we think that memo says about the orchestrated effort. This group, a large group, John Brennan, James Clapper, and others coordinating together to try to undermine Donald Trump, not only as candidate, but also then after he was elected as president. It's a shocking story. We don't know the details of the memo yet. It's just that when I was interviewing Joe DeGeneva last week, he said that you can already see the memo. We put that on our Facebook page where you could find it. It's kind of lifted from a document, another document. So this is a very serious memo. So the House Intelligence Committee, though, cannot make it public unless they vote by majority to release it. And then once they do that, the president can veto that or he can let it go public. So it's kind of under, you know, it's not something we have happen often, so we're not familiar with that procedure. But there's been there's a struggle, of course, to release it. The Democrats are out of their minds over it. They do not want this memo released. And so they've come up with some very clever counters. One of them is that the House Intelligence Committee's top Democrat, who is, of course, Adam Schiff, has decided to release their own memo. So they've prepared their own memo, which they say is the true memo. It's not the real memo. And, of course, they want to water down and discredit what the Republicans want everyone to see. And so the other thing, of course, they're doing is that now they are coming up with this theory that President Trump tried to talk or said to his attorney that he wanted to get rid of Bob Mueller. And that's supposed to be some unpardonable sin. By the way, Andy McCarthy writes a long article on that, and he talks about how ridiculous that is. He says that a president has a right to hire and fire staff. He says a president does not obstruct justice by merely firing a subordinate, which he has the incontestable constitutional authority to do. Of course, if there is concrete evidence that a crime has been committed, and if the president engages in criminal conduct to cover it up, like bribing witnesses, suborning perjury, Congress could well decide that firing the prosecutor is a corrupt, impeachable offense. But if there's been no crime, and if a president believes the deleterious effects of an investigation on his capacity to govern outweigh the political damage from terminating the prosecutor, that is a reasonable choice to make, under circumstances in which, as a matter of constitutional law, the president does not need a reason at all. And then he goes on to say, since firing the prosecutor would not be obstruction of justice, it is obvious that thinking about but deciding not to fire the prosecutor is nothing close to to obstruction of justice. So that's what Andy McCarthy has to say about all that. But of course, that's, I told you they'd come up with something to get our minds off of this four-page memo. We're not sure what's going to happen. Some people are hoping that the president will mention this memo in his State of the Union address tomorrow night and encourage the release of it and join with Nunez and other members of this committee in the House to make it public for everyone to see. There is a hashtag that's been trending. If you don't do Twitter, these words don't mean anything to you, but it means that tons of people are repeating the message, release the memo. And release the memo, of course, is in regard to this four-page memo. But in response to that, now I did touch on this last week. I'd really like to go into more detail with it, but maybe not in this moment. Dianne Feinstein and Adam Schiff wrote this long letter to the heads of Google and I think Facebook suggesting that this thing, release the memo, was trending, was going viral, was being repeated by so many people because it was Russian bots. It's Russian bots, you see, and you must get to the bottom of this because this is very dangerous to release this memo. And then, of course, what I'm reading, excuse me, is that internal, whatever their internal measurements are, an investigation about by Google and I guess Facebook, I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me, but I think it is Facebook, are saying, or Twitter, maybe it is, that no, these are actually people. They're not really Russian bots, but that doesn't matter. You see, the truth doesn't matter. You can't imagine, of course, can you or I imagine that people would actually want to see the memo and might repeat that phrase, release the memo? Can't imagine that, right? It has to be Russian bots. So that's how ridiculous. Of course, it doesn't have to be Russian bots. It isn't Russian bots. It's just ridiculous. But that's the lengths to which the left is trying to go to stop this. And Kimberly Strassel of Wall Street Journal has a great article on this. We will post this on our Facebook page, and I'm going to read a bit of it to you. It's called Operation Sabotage the Memo. Kimberly says, Congressman Adam Schiff has many talents, though few compared his ability to function as a human barometer of Democratic panic. The greater the level of Schiff hot, pressured air, the more trouble the party knows it's in. Mr. Schiff's millibars have been popping ever since the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, on which he is the ranking Democrat, last week voted to make classified GOP memo about FBI election year abuses available to every House member. Mr. Schiff has spit and spun and apoplectically accused his Republican colleagues of everything short of treason. The memo, he insists, is profoundly misleading, not to mention distorted and political, and an attack on the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He initially tried to block his colleagues from reading it. Having failed, he's now arguing that Americans can know the full story only if they see the underlying classified documents. She goes on later to say, the Schiff pressure gauge is outmatched only by the Justice Department and the FBI, which are now mobilizing their big guns to squelch the truth. And that included a Wednesday Justice Department letter to Mr. Nunez, written by Assistant Attorney General Stephen Boyd, designed as a memo to the media, copied to its allies in Washington, and immediately leaked to the public. And the department wonders why anyone doubts the integrity of all its hardworking professionals. Anyway, it goes on. She talks about the slippery shadow in all of this is Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. For those of you, I remember he's running the Justice Department. The Russian party's over. He appointed Bob Mueller because Jeff Sessions recused himself. So Mr. Rosenstein is in charge of all of this. Instead of taking up that challenge, Kimberly says, he named an old and dear friend of the FBI as special counsel. That's Robert Mueller. And directed him only to look at Mr. Trump. And Mr. Rosenstein appears to have signed up as an active participant in the effort to thwart any congressional investigation of the other side of the issue. I'm going to read the last paragraph. A department head interested in truth doesn't flout subpoenas. He doesn't do a runaround at the Intelligence Committee and try to sucker House Speaker Paul Ryan into aiding a stonewall by asking him to intervene just before a deadline and block a contempt citation. He doesn't sit on knowledge of outrageous texts between FBI agents and force Congress to drag it out of him. And he doesn't sign off on the leaks and character assassination in which his department daily engages to undermine Congress. Anyway, that's a great article. We'll put it on our Facebook page. And but that memo, it's bubbling up, and we need to keep the pressure on because the American people need to see what's in there. We need to know how corrupt our officials are, and it needs to be exposed so that we can purge those departments of those people that have been undermining the sovereignty of this country to bend the nation to their will. That's what they've been doing. They don't want the American people to have a choice of who their president is. They don't like this president. And I have to say, it's worse than that. There are some people that don't like the president. I understand that. But we're talking about a move to derail the country and its constitutional principles. It started under Barack Obama, and it's just been moving on. I have several little pieces I want to share with you before I run out of time here. Some good news. Our friend Catherine Engelbrecht with True the Vote down in Houston has received a court ruling against the Internal Revenue Service. You remember they harassed Catherine. She ran King Street Patriots in Houston. It was she and her husband owned a big business, or a small business, and they had never been involved in politics, and Catherine could not stand what she was seeing, and so they, True the Vote, was organized to start making sure that people who were voting were American citizens. Well, as a result of that, the IRS came after them with a vengeance. In fact, several agencies did. And Catherine's business was just, they were visited by SWAT teams. They were regulated out of existence. It was a nightmare. And so they have just won in court. And so that's a very good thing. Also, the court's Justice Department, this is not a court ruling, but the Justice Department sided in court Thursday with two conservative student groups in a high-profile case involving conservatives Ann Coulter and David Horowitz and free speech policies at the University of California, Berkeley. You remember the problem is that these, especially Berkeley, but other colleges and universities as well, will not allow conservative speakers, or they will allow them, but then they don't protect them. And they've had riots. It's been a nightmare. And so the left in colleges and universities are upset about this, but the Justice Department has weighed in with a very good statement. In fact, I'll read this. The United States has a significant interest in the vigilant protection of constitutional freedoms in institutions of higher learning. As the Supreme Court has noted, teachers and students must always remain free to inquire, to study, and to evaluate, to gain new maturity and understanding. Otherwise, our civilization will stagnate and die. Signed by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Many of you who wonder what he's doing, I know there's a lot of criticism of Attorney General Sessions, and I've tried to tell you, and I'm saying again today, there is so much going on behind the scenes that he's doing. This is just one example. Now, here's an interesting little sidebar. You may not remember this, but I surely do because I worked on Alan Key's campaign for Senate in Illinois when Barack Obama was running for Senate the very first time. And at the time, Louis Farrakhan, of course, was a regular figure at his church. Jeremiah Wright and Louis Farrakhan were good friends. And there was an attempt to hide the friendship between Louis Farrakhan and Barack Obama. In fact, let's see. Farrakhan said in 2016 he had a much closer relationship with Barack Obama than anyone he knew and that he met with Obama shortly before he announced his presidential campaign. We supported him when he was community organizer. We backed him with money and with the help of the Fruit of Islam to get him elected. So I say that to say to you that I know that there were photos of Barack Obama and Louis Farrakhan that were hidden from the public. And now the journalist who had those photos has confessed that. He announced last week he will publish a photograph of then-Illinois Senator Barack Obama and Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan that he took in 2005 at a congressional Black Caucus meeting. But he didn't make it public because he believed it would have made a difference to Obama's political future. This is from Jim Garrity, and I just want to read Jim's last statement here. It says, now that Obama has completed two terms, does anyone else have some information they would like to share? Interesting story, interesting question, and so it goes. I told you a lot was happening. Tomorrow is the State of the Union address by the president. Tomorrow night we'll be talking about that, of course, mostly on Wednesday, but just so you know, to kind of remember and set your clocks or so that we can watch and see. I don't know what he's going to say on immigration. I don't know what he's going to say about the memo. It should be interesting. You know, it always is. You can at least say that. Well, if you are interested in helping the president keep his promises on immigration, go to Numbers USA and sign up, and let's do that, Numbers USA. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.